This episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 651. Today, Roland asks,
on a recent show, you mentioned how things are different now versus the 60s. At least, that's the era I think you mentioned. When it comes to dialogue tags, he saids, she saids, and using action beats to indicate who's talking. Can you elaborate on then versus now? What are current expectations? Are these changes over time cyclical?
They may be cyclical. I'll leave that to the end. Basically, the history you've got is you've got three major eras in the 20th century fiction landscape. The first era, you get, say, Edgar Rice Burroughs and H.P. Lovecraft and that crowd really exemplify it. This is where the narrator is kind of the voice of God. The narration style is very, very florid, and it's very, very formal, and it feels as if you are being relayed the action from a God's eye view. Everything is omnipotent, you generally know what everybody is thinking all the time. If there's limitations, the limitations are fairly self-conscious, where it feels as if the narrator knows things that he's not telling you. And this was generally the way that stories were told until the post-depression era, the Great Depression, actually. Things really started to shift in the late 20s, and they reached their full flower of the new way of doing things in the mid-30s, or late 30s. This way had a narrative voice that was far more conversational. Felt like you were being told a story by someone who was there and saw what was going on, rather than by God. Now, keep in mind, these eras are kind of rough. There are examples of pioneers before these eras that did things like Mark Twain had a very conversational style. Arthur Conan Doyle in the Sherlock Holmes books had a very conversational style, especially for the time. But I'm talking about the era when this really went mainstream. So the conversational style dominated through up until the late 60s, when you get into what I'll call the telegraphing style. So the conversational style, there was this tone of familiarity about it, and it was very, very clear about what was going on. There was never a chance of misunderstanding what tone of voice a person was using. And the dialogue was much more naturalistic, and so explaining to the reader what tone of voice was employed and where the tension was sitting in any given scene was very important, because in naturalistic speech, so much of what you get is telegraphed through body posture and tone of voice and facial expression and that sort of thing. And you can give a lot of information through shorthand by saying, "Bob looked wise." When you say someone looked wise in the course of a conversation, what you get is a feeling that someone has taken on a bit of an uppity air, as if he's an all-knowing oracle and is about to condescend to the person he's talking to, which in fact is what someone does when you use that type of thing. But they would say person A looked a certain way, and then they would give an emotion. You know, he looked angry, he looked wise, he looked happy. Without describing the face or anything like that, they just give it to you so they can move you along. And combined with that, you get dialogue tags. Like, you get a five-year-old boy coming into a room, jumping up and down, excited because he's just seen a car crash out front. And he'd say, "Mom, come look what I did," Bobby ejaculated. That's technically correct. An ejaculation is a jumping up and down shouting type of exclamation, but it was co-opted by the medical establishment in the late 19th century, and the use of ejaculated to mean what a male does when he achieves orgasm and expels semen has taken over the popular consciousness, and the older, not dirty version of the word has completely lost any currency. So if in today's world you published a story with a five-year-old kid ejaculating at his mother, well, you're into a whole different kind of fiction than you would be if you did that in the 30s, 40s, or 50s. So there's language uses changes as well, but that kind of really intense description of basically every sentence, especially any time there's a turn in the conversation or a change of mood, you would get those in almost all the dialogue tags. When there's a question mark, they would say, he asked or he questioned, which is obvious from the dialogue, but it was very important to the writers to make sure everything was extremely clear because they were using very naturalistic dialogue in defiance of previous convention. And this kind of thing was the norm up until the baby boomers got into the game. Starting in the mid-60s, really, but really taking hold in the late 60s and early 70s, the baby boomers started changing the game up. They used a much more telegraphic style, where instead of saying, he looked sad, they'd say, he frowned. Instead of saying, he shouted, they would put an exclamation point on the end of the sentence and say, he said. They were much more likely to use long-running passages with no dialogue tags whatsoever, and just use the rhythm of the words cutting back and forth as the way to keep track of things. And Tolkien actually did this a lot in Lord of the Rings, which was one of the heavy influencers on the style transition of the era. Tolkien used a lot of telegraphic techniques in Lord of the Rings far in advance of when it became popular. Other major influencers were Raymond Chandler and Norman Mailer. To a lesser extent, Gore Vidal wasn't a major influencer until later on in the generational cycle. But anyway, this started creeping in, this really sparse... Oh, the Beat Poets were another big influence. This really sparse style started creeping in the late 60s and early 70s, and has just been gaining momentum ever since. Things have gotten more telegraphic, sentences have gotten more terse. Controlling the reader's engagement with the story by sentence length and page layout, which is paragraph length and paragraph structure, have become more and more common. These were always tools that were available, and writers did use them from time to time. In fact, all writers used them a little bit, at least, all throughout... ever since, really, Shelley, as far as and before that in the poets. These were techniques imported from poetry. But as the fashionability of dialogue tags left, necessity of using these other tools came more and more to the fore. Dialogue tags went so out of fashion that there was a whole genre of jokes built around them. It was called the Tom Swifty after the Stratemeyer Syndicate books, The Tom Swift Jr. Adventures. The Stratemeyer Syndicate was very stringent in its requirements to use what we would call florid dialogue tags or descriptive dialogue tags. And they were so common that it became a joke among professional writers that if you were doing that a lot, you were committing Tom Swifties. An example of a Tom Swifty joke is, "My blood is better than yours," Tom said vainly. The Stratemeyer Syndicate's books used a lot of puns in their Tom Swifties as well. So it became a bit of an object of derision to use dialogue tags, and kind of the mark of an amateur writer. The dialogue tag, in this case, has joined a number of other techniques that you should never do. There's a whole stable of techniques that you should never touch and never do, and the reason that people tell you that is because these are things that are really easy to do. They're really easy to do, so all beginning writers do them badly. But they're very, very difficult to do well, and it takes a master to do them well. I'm not going to go through an exhaustive list here because it would be an exhausting exercise, but if you go to any magazine that's accepting stories from the low to mid-range pro market, they'll have a list of topics they don't want. And most of those topics are topics they don't want because they're the topics everybody writes, because beginners reach for the low-hanging fruit, culturally speaking, Adam and Eve stories and other stuff like that. Tom Swifties are one of those types of techniques. One of the ways to gauge your development as a writer, by the way, is to occasionally look at those techniques and stories and whatnot that you're never supposed to do and try to do one and see if you can do it well. If you can do it well, that tells you you have moved into the range of mastering your craft. Some writers that use dialogue tags like that to fantastic effect really are Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett. They do it for comic effect, such as the overuse of the word grim during the passage with Sergeant Gilkes in Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Adams uses grim to describe at least two actions in every sentence for an entire page. but it actually works. And this is how you can tell you're in the hands of a master, when they use something as a joke, but those people who aren't in on the joke would not even notice that it was going on. They would just be completely caught up in what the writer was doing. That's a whole aside. Anyway, the style since then has become really telegraphic, and you want to, you know, describe the physicality of what's going on. You concentrate on the surface of the characters as seen through the point of view of your central character. You use said because it doesn't draw attention to the narrator, which is the main reason that dialogue tags have fallen out of favor, is because they draw attention to the fact that there's narration going on, as opposed to allowing the reader to stay completely immersed in the story. So you use something like said just to let people keep track of who's talking, or you use action beats where you break up a monologue with a description of what the character is doing at the time. I call these wrapping the glasses, because a writing mentor explained to me while we were packing a house for a friend and wrapping up drinking glasses that one of the things my writing was missing was that during the dialogue scenes, all action stopped and we never saw people wrapping the glasses. So in my head, that's what I call it. But using action beats like that to control pacing and to help the reader keep track of things during dialogue scenes is one of the ways that you replace a dialogue tag. There's also a formatting issue. Back in the 60s and earlier, dialogue tags almost always either followed the statement or went somewhere in the middle of the statement. Whereas now you can just as easily stick the dialogue tag on the front of the sentence as if it's in a script. Bob said, while he was doing this, and include it in the middle of the sentence, and that flows really well for the reader. Some people think it's stylistically awkward and don't like it, but most readers accept it no problem at all, and in fact really like it, because they're just sort of watching a movie play out in their head. And this brings me to why I think this has all happened. I think this has all happened because the entertainments that have been competing with books have changed. Once upon a time, of course, nobody could read. Really nobody. Nobody except priests and professional writers. And professional writers weren't usually novelists or playwrights, though there were some of those. Professional writers were bookkeepers, people who kept records at court, stuff like that. So when literacy came in and people started learning to read for educational purposes, they got this fantastic bonus. They suddenly had access to a form of entertainment that was entirely private. This had never happened before. If you wanted entertainment before there was the novel, you could go to a dance hall, you could go to the theater if you were in the city. If you were out in the country, you could sit around with your friends and your family, playing a musical instrument, singing songs, telling each other stories. You could wait for the troubadour to come through town, all that sort of stuff. Books changed all of that. Books and penny dreadfuls and newspapers, all massive forms of popular entertainment, and entirely private. If you didn't want anyone to know what you were reading, you could put another book's cover on it. And it was this amazing new technology that gave you a private mental world that previously was unavailable to you. Then came the movies. And movies are even better than books, because it's still private. You know, I mean, people can see you coming and going from the theater, but you're in the dark and you're watching this thing, and you get all the fun parts of being in a crowd without being scrutinized, and it's really immediate and highly sensational. So the fiction of the era shifts to accommodate. It becomes more sensationalized, more concentrated around high adventure, and the children that grow up both reading books and watching movies bring into their prose style in the 20s, 30s, and 40s some of the conventions of filmic storytelling that nobody else had. They try to make it more immediate. They expel the voice of God, and they bring in the conversational voice. You'll notice that a lot of films from the era have the conceit of being a story told to somebody else. There was a dialogue there between film and books. That kind of frame story was really, really popular in the fiction of the era. And that conversational style was really revolutionary in popular fiction, especially the higher up the feeding chain you get, especially in third-person fiction. So that really shaped a whole era, and then you get the baby boomers moving into the mix in the late 60s and early 70s, and these are people who've grown up not just on film, but on television. Television has a whole other set of things about it. It's much tighter. It's much faster paced. It's much more trivial in a sense. But it's also highly available, so the fiction has to be that much more intense and interesting and hold your interest. So they developed a whole series of techniques. A lot of them were techniques that had already existed, but they really refined them to make them sharp focused, to hold your attention. They perfected cliffhangering. They perfected the control of the eye over the page with the shape and structure of the words laid out on the page. All sorts of cues that they picked up from watching endless amounts of television and film. And they also brought in editing techniques. I read an article in, I think it was in the 1988 or 1989 Writer's Market. It was one of the articles in the foreword section of the Writer's Market, where they usually have articles on writing. Must have been originally published in Writer's Digest in the late 80s by Stephen King, on training yourself to narrate as if you are the eye of a camera moving through a room. Fantastic article, if you can find it. I read it when I was 12, so I can't remember what it was called. But had a major effect on the way that I understood storytelling, and a very, very useful article if you can find it.
We'll try to find it.
Yeah, we'll try to find it and put it in the show notes. But that notion of a book being a movie for your mind is all through the way that books are written now. And it comes in with the baby boomers who grew up on film and television, and they grew up basically experiencing all story as a form of film. And so, you know, some of this engineering was deliberate, but a lot of it was evolutional. But the style now, of course, is very terse. It's very external. It's very surface, because we all watch so many films. And one of the major failure modes of this, of course, is that your characterization goes skin deep, which is the whole reason that I'm doing the deep characterization series. And I'm actually going to finish it up here in the next couple of months, because I've got the brain space for it again. But those are the ways that it's evolved and how things are done now. And oh boy, I hope I haven't missed anything, because the recorder died the first time I tried to record this question, so I may be misremembering how much of this question I've answered. In terms of the pendulum swing, I don't know if it's a pendulum swing. I do know that there's the occasional writer who is steeped in the classics and the classical mode of storytelling that brings back older techniques to great effect. Stephen R. Donaldson, Umberto Eco, Douglas Adams, and Terry Pratchett. Weirdly, Anne Rice kind of does that.
Some of that might be genre. Certain genres have the expectation of a more florid style. Certain genres are more terse and always have been more terse. Like noir and crime fiction tends to be more terse than what is generally accepted. Romance tends to be more florid. Erotica tends to be especially florid, so florid that people make fun of it in bad sex writing awards and crap like that.
That's true, that's true.
Which are funny, the funniest
ones. Oh, they are. We'll try to find one of those and link to them in the show notes, too. That said, you know, there's only so far you can go with terse before you have a screenplay instead of a book. or a summary instead of a book. So I would expect, especially where things like thrillers are concerned, Lee Child's impact on the thriller market has pushed thrillers to the point of being so terse that they're unreadable. And that's got to be swinging back, because otherwise it's going to kill the genre. I think out of necessity, there are some ways in which the pendulum will swing back. And there's also always the fact that what's old is new again. If you haven't seen a certain style of storytelling in a while, you've got a whole generation for whom that's a new way of doing things, and it doesn't feel old-fashioned anymore. It feels innovative. So in those two limited sorts of cases, the pendulum may well swing back. But in terms of the overall emphasis on controlling the reader's experience through much subtler cues, even if old-style dialogue tags and some of the other older storytelling techniques come back, I think the new techniques that were developed in the Great Paring Down are definitely here to stay. So I think that does it. Thank you very much for the question, Roland, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.
Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.